The following is a quarantine recording presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so serious, like people stare curious, like she got a natural way, her hips sway furious, like yet luxurious, like carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you see this side of the bay.
Hey, this is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head, what we loving on and what we hating on, what we might be and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, pandemic fatigue, we cover it all. We are recording from Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and Reconstruction. It's a challenging time, a changing time. It's a time of transformation. It's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed.
She don't like violence, but she can done in things, so don't let your guard down. Her thighs are sore, but her eyes are hard. You can't just try, tell her, come on now.
Our guest this week is a comedian and a creative visionary. You know her as Tiffany Dubois of HBO's Insecure and her stand-up special, I Be Knowin'. She's the host of NBC's Bring the Funny, and she hosted the 2020 BET Awards. She's the creator of the comedy game show Smart, Funny, and Black. She speaks truth to change through her podcast and book, which are both titled Small Doses. I'm so, so thrilled, excited, elated to have her on the pod today. Because obvi, I could only be talking about the one and only Amanda Seales. Hey, Amanda. You're on mute. Hold on.
Oh. Enable mic. Oh. I'm here.
Gaza.
Hello, my darling. How are you?
I'm good right now. So I'm going to just claim that today. I'm good. I saw a lot of annoying programming that centered white people today, but I'm claiming it. I'm going to claim my goodness. I have to claim it. I was watching his Dark Materials, the finale on HBO, and I was like, did y'all kill every black person in the show in one episode?
Like, how is that possible?
Did y'all kill every black person in the show, the Latino man, and then you named the little white girl as Eve? I was like, how did all of this happen in one
not on today
episode?
Not on today.
So it was a tough time. It was a tough time, but nonetheless, we persevere. Yes.
I mean, it's the Bible reference for me, sis. Yes. I really can't.
That's the one that made me pause it. Like, I had to pause the programming and be like, did they do that? They did do that. Huh.
We are like in the middle of a massive culture war, and I find it so fascinating. But we're going to get into all that. We're going to get into it, child. Let me ask you first. Let's warm it up because I got to ask. We are still, contrary to popular opinion, in a pandemic.
I know. I saw people roller skating in Atlanta today, and I was like, oh, so y'all just light dying. Okay.
You know what I mean? I don't understand, but let me ask you. What has your quarantine life been like? And are you learning any new skills or habits as a result of Miss Rona?
I'm learning. The new skill that I'm learning is how to deal with my abandonment issues. So that's been like a great time.
Okay. Talk to me about this. What's going on? Well,
basically, I spent the first 3 months of quarantine in Orlando at my mom's house, which is my childhood home. And I had just come out of, I had like a whole breakdown in February. And then I like fought my way back from that. And then I went to Belize as like a reset. Like I went by myself and it was like gorgeous and it was exactly the healing I needed. As Lauren London told me, you took your pain to the water. And I was
yes.
Yes, Lauren.
Yes.
I did. She was like, it healed you. It healed you, sis. It healed you. And so I was there when the pandemic became the pandemic. Like a dude I was talking to texted me and was like, he called me. He was like, hey, you know how you getting back? And I was like, on a plane. That was my plan. And I was like, I feel like this conversation started further in than it needed to. And he was like, yeah, this shit done popped off. And I was like, because up until that point, it had just been kind of like murmurs. And he was like, nah, like he had to like go to Atlanta and get his son. Like it was like all type of madness that went down in a matter of days. So instead of coming back to LA, I had called my TV husband, Wade, and he was like, nah, don't do it. Don't come back here. He was like, go anywhere but here.
He was like, run.
Yes. And his wife was 8 months pregnant in the background, like, don't do it.
Oh, hell no.
So, you know, I heeded their advice. I went to Orlando. And those 3 months in Orlando were very freeing and healing, and like I mean I regressed back to 16 for a short while, as one would do. So you go back to your parents' house for an extended amount of time and you're like, I'm in my childhood room, like Dominique Dawes is on the wall, the glow in the dark stars are still there. So
I loved those things. Yeah.
So I regressed and I bought a trampoline, which was what I had when I was younger. And I was actually, speaking of new skills, I actually got a skill on that trampoline that I didn't have when I was younger. And so that impressed the shit out of me.
So what you doing? You doing like backflips and shit or what?
Yes. But when I was younger, I could barely pull across a double twist. And I was able to do a 2.5 twist. And I was
yes! 39!
So good. And I did it like so easy. I was so proud of myself. But in that time, I also, I had like reunited with an ex that I had no business reuniting with, but it still ended up serving as like the final chapter for not just us, but for like a number of things that I had been dealing with that I didn't realize I had been dealing with and that I didn't realize were like in the way of things that I want to happen for myself and of peace and whatnot. And I think just the also being separate from LA, like being able to just be. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I mean, I'm at my mom's house. I don't got nowhere to go. Like, I didn't have a lot of obligations. Like, I was one of those people who at the beginning of the quarantine, like, I took off running with like innovation. Like, I found a virtual form of Smartphone in Black. And so we started doing Smartphone in Black virtually. And then I created an app. So we launched SFB Society, which is my social networking app, and it's an alternative to the cesspool that is Instagram. And so like I came out swinging. And then when I came back to LA for the BET Awards, though, like the latter part of the year really took me out the game. November tried to kill me. It tried to kill me. Mm-hmm. It did. But I managed to persevere by the grace of, I'm not even just going to say God, because there were ancestors involved. There were guides. Like, I'm sure Dumbledore made an appearance. Like, everybody. Yeah, everybody gathered around for the cipher of lifting Amanda up. So when I say I'm good, like, it's a very weighted, like, response. Like, sometimes we say that and it's just very, like, flippant. But when I say that, like, that's, like, a big deal because I haven't been good for a while and I'm, like, really good.
You look good. I heard through the grapevine being Instagram.
I was like, the grapevine of the gram. The gramvine.
He was like, ooh. Yes, the gramvine that you're in love. And I love love. I love love so much. And so give our listeners some tips about how to keep the butterflies during a pandemic.
We play. Like we went to college, like we were together in college. And so I think like that youthfulness is still very alive in us. I mean, he's also just a goof. Like, but I think that like the truth of the matter is like when you're in the house all day, like, or and you're just around each other more, like you kind of have to create more space for that. I think a lot of us have gotten into the rhythm of like, we're out all day and we come home and you realize like you're only spending a small amount of time with your partner in reality.
That's true.
You know, you kind of wake up and you know, that you may have date night or whatever, but this is different. I think it's been just like necessary for us to keep an open space of like all the facets of our personality. And I'm going to get scared at least once a day. At least once a day, something is going to be done in this house that is like, and it keeps me on my toes.
I don't know how I missed this, but I was literally today years old when I learned that you were a part of the group Flowetry. So first of all, this upsets me that I was today years old.
It's really honestly been blown out of proportion.
I mean, how, sis? How?
Because it lasted everything. A summer.
I mean, a summer with Flowetry is a summer with Flowetry, sissy.
Well, then that's the name of the book. Okay. That'll be the name of the book, because honey, it's a book.
Okay. But I gotta ask, like, is there anything that you don't do? Because you out here being an author, being a podcaster, being a comedian, being an actress, being an artist, you know, people can't see, but I'm going to tell y'all that behind my sister are her paintings. Okay. So listen, Renaissance woman, first of all, I know who I want to be quarantined with when the apocalypse comes. Okay. Because you do it everything. So I got to ask, is there anything that you don't do? She got to think about it.
I don't do pottery. I don't throw pots. I tried it. I was not good at it. And I let it go so I could put that time into other things that I'm actually enjoying. Like, I'm really good at acknowledging like, oh, that's not my bag, and letting it go. That's a gift of mine. But I will tell you this. When it comes to the arts, I'm just like very fortunate. And it's a gift and I'm not going to say a curse, but it's like, sometimes it can feel like it's like, oh, you're doing so many things that you're like splitting the laser. You know what I mean? You're not enhancing them because you're not giving enough energy to one thing. And I had really stopped thinking that, and I kind of descended back into that thinking, and I had to catch myself and remember that, like, no, like, you had a vision of being a multimedia mogul based on your point of view. And so you're going to be building differently. And that's really just kind of the work of the multi-hyphenate, is understanding that you're building differently. And it doesn't undermine in any shape, way, or form folks who say, this is the thing that I do and I'm doing this thing, because that's valuable. But I think for multi-hyphenates, a lot of times we feel like, and we're told, oh, well, if you're doing these many things, that there's no way you can master them because you don't have enough focus. You're not putting enough hours in. But I think what I've come to understand is how to synergize them. My next thing that I really want to work on and master is creative writing.
Ooh.
Like, I wrote my book, which is nonfiction, and it's like self-help and commentary. And I'm ready to write stories.
Ooh. Tell us about a story you really want to write. Without giving your book proposal away, you know.
Well, I really want to write about my time in New York in hip hop.
Give me.
In my 20s and the thousands.
Share us some stories, sissy, from young Amanda in New York during the hip hop era.
And that was a different time. And we haven't seen anything written about that time really yet. I would say Brown Sugar is like the one thing that I can feel like was really like in that era, like in the 2000s.
Yep.
And that was when hip hop had really popped off. You know, it was no longer underground. It was no longer like for hip hop heads. It had become the global sensation. So it's a different time and space. And at that time, I was a host at Sirius Satellite Radio. I was on MTV. I was an MC myself. And I was and foremost, like a real bona fide hip hop head, like in my early 20s, just like standing outside SOBs,
yes,
bartering with the security guard junior, like, well, if I bring you McDonald's, from across the street, will you let me in? Like, that's real shit that was going on, you know? And so that I could get in and see like a Mos Def show, you know? Ooh. Like, but I tell you one thing though, I don't want to write memoir. I don't want to write any of my stories as Amanda. And I have so many stories. I've lived a very full life.
I want to buy this book already.
And I found, like, I was going through like old journals, and it was funny because I also like found entries in here in my old journals about my like love of my life, and it's hilarious. And he's like, "Why you didn't tell me that you felt that way?" Literally in here, like, "I can't believe I'm having feelings for Devon again. Let's be real. I don't have feelings for Devon. Not like that. He's Devon. And I'm sure he doesn't have feelings for me." He's like,
"Oh, these are angsty. Angsty juicy.
This is yes. all angst. This is like, I just can't. Like, why is everything so difficult? Like, why?" I'm just like, "Amanda, relax."
Look at that full circle. Well, speaking of multi-hyphenates, which thank you for bringing that word back into my life, I want to add activist as a hyphen.
Do we want to add activist?
We do. And I actually want to ask you to describe and define yourself, because I know for me, I don't use the word activist. I use the word organizer, and I have
because
particular reasons I do that. But I want to hear from you, because people have given you this hyphenate, and I see you as somebody who is active, outspoken, and who is political and puts political content into the art that you put out into the world. And so give me a sense of where that comes from. I mean, do you come from a political family, or were you politicized at a certain point in your life? Like, give us the story of where that comes from for you and what your orientation is to how you be political.
Well, my mother is from Grenada. And if anyone knows anything about Grenada, like, Grenadians are political. It's just, it's like oceans. You know what I mean? Facts. It's just like, it's just built into the landscape of us. We're nationalists. Like, every Grenadian is like, "Grenada, Grenada!" You know, like, it's a thing. I mean, as I sit here and look around, there's like three nutmegs, like, because the nutmeg is a Grenada symbol. And there's like three nutmegs I can see visibly in my home that it's like, we know you're from Grenada. You don't have to remind us and yourself at all times. So there's that. And then, like, my uncle is a judge in Grenada, or he's a retired judge in Grenada, and he ran for like a political position in Grenada. And like, my uncle is a diplomat. There's just kind of that energy. And then my mom has just always been about it, like, just as a curious information gathering person and just someone who's really about fairness. Because the thing about being anti-racist is just, it just isn't fair.
That's right.
you know what I mean? So I think a lot of times people put a lot of stuff on top of it, but it's like, racism just isn't fair. Like, it doesn't make any fucking sense. It's not logical. It's not practical. Well, for actual, like, humans that care about humanity. And it's also just unjustified and unfair. So if you live a life based on those values and morals, it just doesn't fit in. And then on top of that, my mom has just always been, she's a Black power mofo. Like, I remember, like, years ago on Twitter, I told a story that people like really attacked me for, but I still stand by it, where my mom was in a Walmart shop parking lot, and this Black woman was pushing her Black child and had a white doll in the cart. And my mom was like, my mom stopped her and was like, "Well, why are you getting her a white doll?" And of course, people are like, "That's not your mother's business." Perhaps, but we are very big believers in we are each other's business. And I will tell you this, I always had Black dolls. Like, my mother, and this was in the 80s when it was not easy. My
mom had Black dolls.
I'm going to four different locations, you know, and we're in LA. She's going to Pick and Save and Fedco trying to find, you know, these things. But she had a conversation with this woman. The woman was like, "Well, you know, that's the doll she wanted. And my mom was like, but is it the doll she needs?
Okay. You know what? Also big 2021 energy.
But is it the doll she needs? And my mom was like, were there any black dolls on the shelf? And she said, well, yeah. She said, well, I think you should go back in and get the black doll. And like the woman didn't flip because the woman heard her.
Yeah, because she felt that shit in her gut. She was like, wait a minute.
Why does my child want a white doll?
Okay.
And my mother remembers
that in her gut.
My mother remembers when one of my playmates, one of my friends, like she was a white girl and we were distributing the dolls and she got the black doll. She got one of the dolls that she got in her distribution was a black doll. And she was like, like, and she felt away. And I was like, so you got a problem playing with the black doll?
That was a wrap.
I mean, I think for all intents and purposes, too, like my mom was very, my mom loves media. Like she loves movies and film and music. And I just was raised in a home full of very black power centric media, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that I didn't have my fair share of like 90210 and BBC films, you know? Like I was watching, you know, all types of Fawlty Towers and random, you know, white people from England. But then I was also watching Roots and A Different World and The Cosby Show and all the things and being given context. And even though my mother wasn't from the States, she has always centered Black American history as something that she didn't learn growing up, but that she needs to know. Like, I remember when my mom randomly started using house nigga, like casually. And I was like,
you were like, wait a
by the third usage, by the third usage, I was like, when did this enter the vocabulary?
Okay.
This is new vernacular. And she was like, oh, well, I've been listening to Malcolm X tapes on my breaks. Oh. Like, all right. Amazing. Right on, sis. Right on. Like Small Axe, the new Steve McQueen movie, the series of films about West Indians in, well, Caribbean people, West Indians in London. I mean, that's my mom's life. My mom was in nursing school in London in the 60s. I mean, that was her life. Lovers Rock, the whole one. She's like, oh my God, yeah! You know, it's the whole thing. So, but to answer your latter part of the question, I feel like the word activism was much more simple when I was like in grad school at Columbia in the Institute for Research in African American Studies. And we were taking classes like art as activism. And, mm-hmm. you know, it felt very just kind of like anyone who centers themselves as a part of the change they wish to see for the people, right? So activism, whereas organizing is organizing the people to be the change. And that's a different thing. I'm not an organizer. I don't have enough hospitality skills to do organizing. I don't.
What do you mean you don't have
I don't. Because I love the people, but I don't like people. So I need us to understand the distinction between that.
I actually appreciate that.
I've had to become very in touch with the realities of my existence. Like,
I appreciate that.
I have a lot of individuals that I hold near and dear, and I am 100% for the liberation of the people from capitalist ideals, from all the, you know, from all the obias, all of it. But that, but the proximity.
It's good to know yourself, sis. It's good to know yourself. Like, that's the number one rule.
And I'm not a patient person. And my man is always like, you know, patience is a virtue. And I'm like, I am virtuous in other ways. There's a lot of virtues. There's a lot of virtues.
Come on.
I read someone say that make sure your activists aren't capitalists. And that was one of those things that made me be like, well, I'm not an activist. Like, even capitalist becomes a confounded concept because I have art in commerce. Mm-hmm. Now, do I create commerce at the forsaking of the people? No. Do I always center the people in my commerce? Yes. Do I strive? Is it a part of my company culture? Is it a part of my value system to be ethical in the exchange of my creative goods?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But that doesn't make me not a capitalist. Like, it's, I'm still engaging in capitalism.
Well, everybody is. Everyone is.
So I need some insight from you, because you know I'd be calling you like, Alicia, clear this up for me.
Well, I think, okay, for me personally, when I heard that quote, I think of people for whom activism is a way to monetize the process of change. And frankly, I see that as people who are less invested in the change and they're more invested in the
change, in getting the change. Getting
them coins, you know what I'm saying? So, and there is that streak, I think, inside of change work. And I've been thinking about it a lot because, you know, this whole season of Real Housewives of Atlanta is like all about Portia's activism.
LOL, that whole sentence. Never seen an episode in my life.
Okay, so,
no, live in your truth.
When I watch it, I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. There's things that are fascinating to me about it, but I mostly think about how people who are not involved in change are looking at it and how they're seeing it and what they're getting from it. And the one thing that I worry about, I think it's good for activism to get bigger platforms, to reach people who are like, I don't know what that is. I don't really care about that. And to get them to maybe care about it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think what it can do is distort, because you and I both know that bigger platforms tend to two-dimensionalize things that need to be three-dimensional.
Absolutely.
So I worry about what comes from that, right? And I worry that, you know, we start to get into this thing where people are like, well, I want to build a movement, but I want to build a movement for the things I want to build a movement for, not for all of us to be good and free and live well and have the things we need. But like, I want people to turn up about a thing that I'm mad about. And it's like, that's not really how this works.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
I get it.
That's how I see the thing that you're describing.
I mean, ultimately, like, my bottom line is community. And I want to use my creativity to enhance, empower, and enrich the Black community, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I think for some people, they feel like, well, if that's how you feel, then everything you do should be free. And I'm like,
no, I don't agree with that.
I'm like, then that becomes my hobby. Then, because yeah, then I need to find that. Something else, as a, you know? And so I think that's the thing that I bump up against with the concept of being called an activist. You know, I just live an existence of, oh, hell no. Nah. You know, like, that's just my...
Totally.
That's my... Like, my man says if I was a basketball player, like a street ball player, that my N1 jersey would be More to Say. Like, that would be nice. My name.
I love that. You should get that thing. Get that thing. You ain't got to wait.
His would be Play Too Much, but mine would be More to Say. And I will tell you, I got very downtrodden about my outspokenness and about just its value, particularly during the election, because I felt like I was just seeing so many disparate voices. I mean, I guess that's the work of these algorithms and the trickery that you learn about when you watch certain documentaries like The Hack and Social Dilemma. Like, they're putting certain shit in your face to skew you. And they were successful. I don't know who they is every time, but they, you know, dementors or paid white people, they were very successful in making me feel very disconnected from the us of it all.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me say, well, I just don't, why am I even talking about us anymore? Like, why am I even, like, I just kind of, I fell off. I feel myself, you know, like, reconnecting. But I think also part of that, too, is just, like, certain stuff that I went through in the last 2 years of just being famous for the first time, like, in a real way, and understanding what the us of it all looks like in Hollywood.
Mm, honey. We need a whole other show to talk about that one.
And, you know, and that too was just very disheartening.
I understand.
You know, and so you, so I had to kind of like destroy and rebuild, I guess.
Well, speaking of destroy and rebuild, we just completed a whole ass year that was in a lot of ways a complete dumpster fire, but also there were a lot of really unexpected and beautiful things that came out of chaos and despair.
Yeah.
Right. So I got to ask you, because we're now in the beginning of a new year. And first, my question is, New Year's resolutions or nah? And if the answer is yes, I do them.
Yes.
I want to do a little twist on this, which is, what is a lesson that you learned in 2020 that you're bringing with you into 2021?
A lesson I learned in 2020 that I'm bringing with me into 2021 is I don't have to call it out every time. And this is particularly in my personal life. I think it's very important to call it out every motherfucking time in real life. But in my home, I don't have to call it out every time. And I know some people may be like, but what if? And it's like, you realize that much of the times you're calling it out is for you, not for us. It's really not for y'all. Mm. Like, it's for your ego. Like, you just want to feel like, I saw that and I'm acknowledging it. It's not because you want it to like make, you know what I'm saying? Like, the energy around that is different. And I think, another lesson I learned is that you can know the truth. Just because you know it doesn't mean the person is ready to receive it. And so you have to, you got to dance with that. You know what I mean? And like, sometimes there are things that need to be said, even if they're not ready to receive it, there are things that need to be said, and you got to package that a certain way too. So a lot of my lessons this year were personal life lessons. Like, I'll tell you the biggest fucking lesson I learned. I got it right here for you.
Come on, bring it.
I learned how to identify the difference between my intuition and my fears.
Ooh. Come on. Come on. That hit. How would you describe the difference? Or how do you get to that place?
You pause. You give yourself the moment to pause and really identify, like really dissect. Or not even dissect, examine. So like, for instance, I was in a really whack ass toxic relationship that continued to go on, even though, you know, he broke up and exited several times, but so many times, what I thought was my intuition being like, you know, you have to fight for this, was really just my anxiety of this ending. It was just that. It's not even much deeper. But in looking back in hindsight, I'm like, that's all that was happening. You were just scared. And it's not even like there was anything for you to really be scared of in the long run. But in that capsule of space, you just felt like you're letting go of something, and it was going to have such a, and it just, and the thing is, when you have abandonment issues, so many times your feelings and responses to things are subconscious. Like, they're not even very clear conscious to sit like things. Like, you're feeling a despair that's related to the chemical reaction that happens in your body related to something that happened mad young, when you were mad young. Like, you're just used to this response. And so when that epiphany came to me during therapy, and we, you know, talked with it and really dealt with it, it allowed me to be so much more trusting of myself in examining in the stillness and giving myself stillness to examine in. And I don't nail it every time, but it's a different practice than before, which is just like, I feel it, so it's right.
And
And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. So, I gotta say, I did not know that this week was gonna turn out like this. Cha, it's a lot. So I'm gonna spend a little more time this week recapping the events. Because what the entire fuck? On top of the list of things that we ain't gonna do this week is attempt a coup. Yep, that's exactly what happened. And it's what is happening. And as you know, Lady has been talking about this for a minute on this show. What's a coup? Well, a coup is what happens when a small group of people tries to take over the government. Well, here's the thing. The attempt at a coup didn't just start this week. It has been in the works for a very long time. Risk factors for a coup include opportunistically taking advantage of public uncertainty, weakening public institutions, and making attempts to dismantle democracy. Sound familiar? I know. They've been doing this all along. Anywho, here's what I also want to say about this. This week was a great example of why you don't play with fire unless you're trying to get burned. This man, Trump, has told you all along who he is and what he stands for. He's shown you. And yet there was a whole business brand built out of both sides-ism. Some TED Talk bullshit about finding unity with batshit crazy. Sorry, but no. Trump has never been anything but what he is. A man who is willing to do whatever to get whatever he wants. Because in this case, the J in Donald J. Trump stands for jankster, which is kind of like gangster, except he's so full of shit, his gangster is janky. I mean, look at these clowns who showed up at the Capitol building and tore that thing up. These aren't people that Donald Trump would ever even have dinner with, but he had no problem using them for his own agenda. Sitting up in the White House with a bag of day-old McDonald's, thinking about how much the people love him. I'm gonna say it one more time. Fuck Donald Trump and fuck his whole crew. And I'll be clear. I mean you, if you fuck with him. No exceptions on that. Second, for all the pearl-clutching people are doing, this is not who we are, blah, blah, blah. Bish, yes, it is. It is who we are. And it's who we have always been. This ain't the first time we elected a president that was a celebrity ideologue with no fucking clue about how to run anything except their mouths. This is America. And I, for one, feel like bumping the shit out of the other Donald's track right now because, huh? Who exactly did you think America was? Finally, let me say this. You need to understand that for anybody who is not white, and no, I'm not being essentialist about this. I am being 100% serious. For anybody who is not white, we are surprised at how surprised you are. But also, we're not. We're observers, watching y'all tear down the thing you enslaved us to build. Watching your worst tendencies come back to bite you in the ass because you refuse to address the elephant in the room. If you are saying that this is not who we are, after a whole ass summer of unrest, because police are shooting and killing people and getting the fuck away with it, well, I hate to say it, but you missed the lesson. And I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to start all over again. This is who we are. And once again, you are being called to decide what you're going to do about it. Black folks are doing our part. We are propping this thing up because we are not trying to drive off the cliff like y'all. We got families to raise and we got lives to live. And we want to live. We don't have a death wish. So don't be surprised if Black folks ain't running to save the burning house. We looking at y'all like, so what y'all gonna do? That's a fact, child.
Now, just 24 hours before this nonsense happened, Kenosha District Attorney Michael Gravely announced, surprise, surprise, that there would be no charges filed in the case of Jacob Blake, just 29 years old, who was shot in the back 7 times by Officer Rustin Shesky, who was also 29 years old. Blake was left paralyzed from the waist down. The DA said that it would be hard to prove that the officer didn't fear for his life, since allegedly Blake was holding a knife. But none of this explains why he was shot in the back. But you know, police going police, whiteness going white, and systems going system. This is a mess, child. This country. Anyways, let's go into what we want more of this week, though. So what we want more of this week is Black voters, who, alongside the new American majority of Asian voters, Indigenous voters, and Latinx voters, flipped the whole damn state of Georgia and elected not one, but 2 Democrats to the United States Senate, effectively bringing the balance of power to 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans, with Democrat Vice President-elect Kamala Harris to break the tie. I know Mitch McConnell did some shots or something this week, child, because the higher they climb, the farther they fall. Wasn't I just talking about how his turkey neck was denying you $1,200 more in relief funds just because he could? Well, say hello to your new Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, whose wife, Elaine Chao, we are told, resigned from the Trump administration a mere week and a half before her fucking term runs out, because when you flip on the lights, the roaches scatter. Shout out to all the organizers who helped lead and lift this victory. And to learn more about them, please check out the Lady Don't Take No episodes with Marisa Franco from Mi Gente, whose organization talked to every Latino voter in Georgia. Ense Ufot from the New Georgia Project, Latasha Brown from Black Voters Matter, and Mondale Robinson from the Black Male Voter Project. Here's other things that Lady loves this week. Now, you know Lady loves a good receipt, honey. And you know Lady wasn't going to leave you hanging about this nonsense with the Capitol Police taking selfies with the cult following of Donald Trump. Because, well, it turns out that some of them may actually be a part of the cult themselves. We did know that the largest police union in the country voted to endorse Donald Trump. And Lady hears that 80% of police officers who voted also voted for Donald Trump. These are all things that Lady don't like. And so why, might you ask, is this on the Lady like part of the roundup? Well, because Lady loves to pull receipts. And I'm going to pull some right here. So this week I did a whole thread on this on Twitter, okay? But I want to hone in on a different aspect that I did not expand on in my thread, just for you. This summer, as the movement to save our fucking lives exploded, yet again, all over the country and all over the world, Lady got a call from one of your favorite pundits. Now, y'all been asking me to name names, but Lady also knows that you're smart enough to walk and chew gum at the same time. Meaning, really, you probably could guess who I'm talking about if you've been paying attention. But if you can't, don't worry. Focus on the story and not the characters. Look, when I want a tabloid, I will. And when I do, baby, baby, you know, if I feel like I gotta name names, I'm gonna say it with my chest. We gonna really go the fuck there. But this, however, is not one of those situations. So let's go ahead and move on, child. Okay, so this summer, as the movement to save our fucking lives exploded again, all over the country and all over the world, and people start rediscovering Black Lives Matter, Lady receives a call from one of your favorite pundits, imploring me to change the slogan of defund the police. For the better part of an hour that I did not have to spend on this nonsense, I was told that the slogan was dumb and that it was going to send Republicans and white people into a tizzy, ultimately resulting in costing the Democrats the election. They even told me that their friend, Jared Kushner, yes, I said that, said to them that defund the police was a gift to Republicans and that the left was stupid for embracing the slogan and so on and so on and so forth and whatnot. Anyways, aside from the fact that I have said 85 million times that I do not have the fucking power to change a slogan used by millions of people for about as many years, I also pointed out that one cannot remake what it is they want because white people can't fucking handle it. When we started Black Lives Matter, people would contact me with all the hand-wringing and all the things and say, "Ooh, it's making people uncomfortable. Why not just say Black Lives Matter too?" Jesus, imagine what would have happened if we had listened to all the people who, again, wanted us to coddle people who could not wrap their minds or their hearts around the fact that they are no more fucking important than anyone else. It's really the two for me, child, but we gonna come back to that another time. Anywho, they then continue to try and like put their balls on the table. You know what I'm saying? Reminding me of the platform they have and how many friends they have on the inside and how they predicted Trump's win, which, by the way, anybody who was fucking paying attention with a little bit of political analysis could do. I mean, I said Trump was going to win the election too, but whatever, child, all the things, okay? Fast forward to today. Defund the police did not actually cost Democrats the election. The primary reason for any Democrat that underperformed is that Democrats have underperformed in the legislature. And the other reason is that Joe Biden was a nobody's first choice, child. But the young voter turnout was exquisite and, frankly, pushed these campaigns over the finish line. So you should say thank you to the movement for that. But aside from that, everyone in the world saw exactly why this movement has been calling for the defunding of the police. From the Capitol Police opening barricades for crazed cult followers to storm the building, to taking selfies with them, to literally underperforming in each and every way, you gotta ask yourself how it is that we spend trillions of dollars on law enforcement and military, and yet still, Vanilla ISIS was able not just to get in the building, but break into the offices of legislators like Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, sending elected officials to hide in an underground bunker for safety, and bring guns into the Capitol. These cats brought guns into the Capitol. Yes, honey, that actually happened. Now, the piece I left out of the Twitter thread was that I said, not only do I not give any fucks whatsoever about what Jared fucking Kushner thinks about any fucking thing, but that the plain and simple reason that the Republicans would lose is because they lack discipline and they have a leader they cannot control. Look what happened here. Do another line, Donald. Just leave the nuclear codes alone, please. Just 2 more weeks, okay? The moral of the story is this. Stop letting people make you think small and subsequently play small. We're not here trying to be friends with these people. We're here to get shit done. And believe me, you, there's a lot of shit to do. There's a lot wrong with politics right now. And to address it, we need clear eyes. They're playing a game of power. And if you really want me to give you my best chess, not checkers moment, as only a hotep would, then hear me out. These people are not to be allied with, selfied with, dinner partied with, or negotiated with. Their primary goal is to dismantle any and all rules that would put any checks on their power. Also, stop taking advice from people who don't know your craft. Black people are not afraid of defunding the police. We don't care about that, just to keep it a buck. We don't care about the slogan. We're afraid of being killed by the police. Black voters turned up and turned out because the Rona is killing us. Police are killing us. and rigged rules are killing us. We don't care about no damn slogan, and we don't care about these political parties, child. We trying to get free, and basically, we trying to stay alive. Okay? Last thing on my list of things that Lady loves this week is Lady turned 40. Yes, eh? Deep, deep gratitude to everybody who sent me a love note or a bottle of tequila on my birthday. I turned 40, and already my 40s are off to a great start. My house is full of flowers from loved ones from near and far. I drank enough tequila to set a house on fire. And even in the midst of a global pandemic and white folks trying to take us back to 1776, my spirit is full. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Amanda, I could talk to you all day.
Ditto.
All day. And especially on a day like today, I needed all of these belly laughs and all of this good wisdom. But I got to ask you, where and how can people follow you on the socials?
So y'all can find me at Amanda Seals on Instagram. I don't really tweet like that, but Instagram. And also we have Smart, Funny, and Black on YouTube and on Instagram. And also, most importantly, you can find me on my own social network, which is SFB Society. So you can go to sfbsociety.com. SFB stands for Smart, Funny, and Black.com. And it's basically a safe space for Black folks and allies who want social media conversation without confrontation. So,
oh, I love that. And I have the app, y'all, so get into it.
Because we don't allow the degradation. You know, people don't know how to disagree. So you can't have like real exchanges because people want to call you out your name. And then it becomes a different scenario.
I have seen what happens when people try it, child. But people can also find you on the next season of Insecure, correct? Is there going to be another season? Please, Lord, let there be another season.
Yeah, we start filming. We start filming in 2 weeks.
Yes, Lord.
And we also have like a Smart, Funny, and Black virtual show. So Smart, Funny, and Black in the Crib will be, we have another show, the first one of the year in February. And I'm looking to launch another comedy, another virtual comedy series this year. And I will be launching an apparel line this year as well.
You know what? Come through. Come through. So it's bring me all this 2021. Yes. Abundance. Bring it all. Abundance. Abundance and blessings. Well, thank you, Amanda. We
thank
love you here.
Thank you, Alicia. Thank you for having me.
You the best. You the best. You the best. You the best. Ooh, I'm so excited about all of this. And that's it for Lady Don't Take No. But I'll be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you where you used to have a commute. We appreciate you joining us, and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what's on your mind, tell us what you like, and tell us what you ain't gonna take no more of. And don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. On Facebook, we're at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about the things you hear about on this show all over our social media. So if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. And a special shout out to Jahari Farrar for making sure the people get what they need from our socials. We appreciate you. Please subscribe and please write us a review. And let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Latyrix. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. And I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, we ain't going back to 1776, child. All right? That's right, I said it. Because Lady Don't Take No.
Lady don't take no shit. Insist on respect the sister. Walk around like a woman is. She won't speak less of something worse. Saying don't play. The girl take herself so serious. Like, people stare curious. Like, she got a natural way. Her hips sway furious. Like, yeah, luxurious. Like, carries herself.
Love y'all.